You're listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we've got all sorts of sounds and stories for you today. We'll hear about how environmentalists 40 years ago created New York's bottle bill and how they now want to update it. Mark Dunley from WOOC talks with Ryan Thorson Carson of NYPERG about adding uncarbonated beverages, wine, and liquors to the bottle bill and raising the deposit to a dime. That's the proposal in Albany this year. We'll also hear the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate, and we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service. On the WGXC Morning Show, it all begins after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Sam Rawlins is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Hillsdale Town Board decided November 9th to permit the sale of cannabis in the town. The board held a public hearing on October 4th. Approximately 35 people participated, and the board then unanimously chose to allow cannabis dispensaries to be established in Hillsdale. The state's deadline for municipalities to opt out of the legislation is December 31st. Hillsdale Town Supervisor Chris Kirsten expressed his support for having the town take no action on opting out. Quote, "We all had an opportunity to reflect on this issue," unquote, Kirsten said. Quote, "For myself, I'm in favor of opting in, and it offers, in my opinion, advantages to the town, unquote. Town Attorney Matt Cobrell said he would investigate what actions residents can take if they disagree with the board's decision. Quote, only because I think that if people disagree with what our decision is tonight, they probably would like to know what they could do to be able to get it on a ballot so the citizens could vote, unquote. Over three fiscal years, the town of Great Barrington, just over the border in Massachusetts, collected more than $6.7 million in sales tax revenue and community impact fees from cannabis sales. The town of Lee, Massachusetts, had its first cannabis retailer opened in 2019, and during its first year of operation generated more than $494,000 in revenue for the town. The New York legislation, signed into law on March 31st, imposes a 9% state excise tax on sales and a 4% local tax. Counties will receive 25% of the local tax revenue, and 75% will go to the host city, town, or village. To opt out of allowing adult-use cannabis retail dispensaries or on-site consumption licenses, a municipality must pass a local law by December 31st. If a municipality does not opt out by that deadline, it will be unable to do so in the future. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Another Columbia County resident and three more people from Albany County died of COVID-19 this week as Columbia County stopped providing daily online updates of case counts and deaths. Columbia Green Media report the Columbia County death was an unvaccinated senior citizen and that all the deaths in Columbia County from COVID-19 have been unvaccinated. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mapp said, and I quote, obviously, from the last 7 or 8 deaths, you can certainly follow the national trend of being unvaccinated people who the virus gets, but they have come from different age groups. It's not consistently one age group in particular, so I don't know where it's going to go, end quote. The Times Union reports that the three deaths there were a man in his 50s, a man in his 80s, and a man in his 90s, while daily caseloads in Albany have hit triple digits once again. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said, and I quote, it is another sad day as I announce three more Albany County residents have died from COVID-19 and I share my condolences with their family and friends, end quote. Warren County, meanwhile, reported 74 new COVID cases on November 10th, the highest one-day case count in that county since the pandemic began. With the cold weather sending people indoors and upcoming holidays having them gather together, more deaths could be on the way. Mab said, and I quote, I think that given how contagious the Delta variant is, I have no doubt that we're going to see a tick up with Thanksgiving. It's also about everybody being indoors more because of the colder weather. I think we are going to stay in the red through the holidays. We'll just get over the Thanksgiving bump, and then we'll hit Christmas and New Year's, end quote.
Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that State Senator Michelle Hinchey tested positive for COVID-19, she announced November 11th. Hinchey said she was vaccinated, and her symptoms are, quote, mild, easily confused for a cold or severe allergies, unquote. Hinchey, a 34-year-old Democrat in her first term in Albany, said she found out November 10th and is isolating at home in Saugerties. She did not say if she knew when she contracted the virus. Photos from a Democratic Party event in Kingston on November 2nd showed Hinchey and many others not wearing face masks. Hinchey used the announcement to urge others to get vaccinated. She said COVID-19, quote, is very much still here, and I encourage everyone who has not yet been vaccinated to schedule an appointment today, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Sam Rowdens reports in Columbia Green Media that Greenport is the latest locality to consider short-term rental regulations to combat skyrocketing local rents. Currently, there are fewer apartments and homes to rent or purchase and more people trying to rent or buy homes in the Hudson Valley. When supply falls and demand rises, prices go up. Part of the reason supply is down is that people are converting apartments and houses from long-term rentals or purchases to short-term rentals. The trend is fueled by a lack of local hotel rooms. Local governments have few options. Create incentives to build hotel rooms and apartments and regulate short-term rentals. The proposed Greenport law reads, in part, and I quote, limiting the number of short-term rentals will preserve the supply of affordable dwelling units available for long-term rentals or home ownership in the town of Greenport and maintain the traditional character of its neighborhoods, end quote. Greenport held its first public hearing on the issue November 3rd and holds another December 1st.
The proposed Greenport law would limit short-term rentals to Greenport property owners who reside in the town for at least 50 days per year. Short-term rental applications could only operate 3 rental sites and would need site plan approval from the planning board and register with the town clerk under the proposal. The city of Hudson and the villages of Catskill and Philmont have also recently passed similar laws. Hunter and Windham have discussed regulations but have not passed any. You can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Larry Rollison is reporting for the Times Union that National Grid told its customers this week to expect to pay $46 more a month for their home heating bills this winter. The increases are caused by inflation and other factors. The company warned customers that average monthly bills will go up nearly 50%. The news comes as consumers face increases in the cost of everything from groceries, clothing, pet food, car parts, and home improvement supplies amid the worst price inflation since 1990. National Grid told customers last month that their heating bills would be 31% higher than last winter because of a huge spike in wholesale natural gas prices. The revised forecast will mean the average customer, who typically paid $100 a month for heat last season, will now pay $147 a month to stay just as warm this winter. Inflation is having its biggest impact on energy prices, which have already increased 30% over the past 12 months, according to data released this week by the U.S. Department of Labor. The pandemic played a role in the increase as well. With the economy rebounding as businesses reopened and people have been vaccinated, rising demand for oil and gas has outpaced industry production, causing prices to spike. And inflation is not just in the United States, it's all over the world after the pandemic ended. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Sioux, an unidentified Brooklyn man was arrested after getting stuck in a snowbank on Hunter Mountain Ski Resort roads, fleeing police who sought him for drawing graffiti on a lean-to on the Spruce Town Trail. The Department of Environmental Conservation found out about the graffiti on the John Robb lean-to on November 2nd from a social media post. On November 4th, they found out that the man returned to the scene of the crime to clean up. When forest rangers arrived, a 39-year-old suspect had fled, but they found him nearby stuck in a snowbank. The man was charged with a Class A misdemeanor for the graffiti on the lean-to and for defacing rock and natural materials on state land. The unidentified man now has a Lexington Town court date on December 15th. And you can read more about this story at Porcupine Sioux.
Larry Parnas is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that the General Electric Company will change its structure beginning in 2023, but that decision will not release the company from its obligation to remove toxins from the Housatonic River. In the coming year, General Electric will decide how its corporate obligations will be divided, including the ordered cleanup in the Berkshires, linked to its former transformer manufacturing business in Pittsfield. On November 9th, company officials announced a plan to split operations into 3 distinct companies in the healthcare, aviation, and renewable energy and power sectors. A Boston-based spokesperson for the Environmental Protection Agency said this week that the rest of the river cleanup announced in February 2020 and finalized in December would stay in effect, regardless of corporate reshuffling. Quote, GE remains fully committed to conducting a comprehensive cleanup of the Housatonic River, rest of the river that protects the environment and the community, unquote, a GE spokesperson said. Quote, the planned organizational changes do not alter the fact that the company is obligated by a court settlement to deal with the aftermath of its long release of PCBs, a probable carcinogen, into the river and its floodplain, unquote, spokesperson said. GE is expected to work in the coming year on which corporate obligations will be attached to which new entity. The rest of the river project is estimated to cost $576 million and be completed in more than 13 years. GE has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to deal with the pollution it left behind in the region. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days.
Well, on Friday, showers and possibly a thunderstorm before 1 p.m. The temperature high will be near 61 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 37 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of showers mainly after 1 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 56 degrees. And scattered showers are expected before 1 a.m. on Saturday night. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 33 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Friday, November 12th on 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. It's time for the Global Agogo Show, trip around the world. Today, hearing tracks from Kalele Kuyute, Trudy Harrison, and Mokhtar Ghania, among others. Then at noon, after the local news, we head back to Hudson, to the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street, where Jared Wiggishud broadcasts the Sugar Shack Jukebox out of the WGXC studio there with all sorts of new R&B, funk, rock, pop, psych, reggae, and more. At 2 p.m., it's time to tune in to the Data Cult audio show. And Lina Filipovich is the artist featured today. She's from Belarus and based in Paris and works with found footage films, experimental electronic music, samples and loops, and more. At 4 p.m. on the WGXC afternoon show, we'll hear from Art Omai's new co-executive director, Gavin Berger. And at 6 p.m., we head to Catskill on Main Street. There, the Clubhouse Radio Teens broadcast their songs and stories until 7 p.m. when teens in Hudson take over, telling you what they've been reading on the Bound by Books show that's put on with the Hudson Area Library. And at 8 p.m., we hear the latest edition of Andy French's Crawl Out from the Fallout show with brand new psychedelic music and more. And at 10 p.m., we're back live in Hudson with Shavar Thomas in the Friday Night Vibe session in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street on 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Musician Patti Smith performs Saturday, November 13th at 8 p.m. at the Ulster Performing Arts Center in Kingston. That's one of the events that's on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. You can add your own event there. There's a button that says Add an Event. If you press that, you can fill in the information about your event that you're helping to organize, and soon enough, folks will be reading your event on the radio at 90.7 FM and all around the world in the WGXC community calendar, wgxc.org.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from our Hudson studio from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Jazz Disturbance, 90.7 degrees, hot.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, November 12th. Seasonably warm start to the day. The early morning temperatures are 50 degrees in Mackey and 58 in Ulster Park. It is going to be rainy all day. Some possible thunder around noon, and despite the temperatures, the higher elevations could still see some snowy precipitation. If you're out during the day, watch for downed branches in the roads. Wind gusts will get up to 25 miles per hour. After dark, the rain ends and temperatures fall to a more reasonable 35 degrees. Saturday will have a rainy afternoon and a high of 54. Sunday will be dry with a high of 50 degrees. Monday morning, there's a chance we can see some snow on the ground. Stay tuned. The hottest temperature expected for next week will be 61 degrees. The coldest temperature expected next week is 30 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 3:37 a.m., high tide at 9:26 a.m., low tide again at 3:58 p.m., and high tide again at 9:44 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 50 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:25 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:38 a.m. Looking way up, we see things are calm around our little rock. However, the sun is causing some ruckus, blasting multiple CMEs off on the far side. For now, we are not in view of that roiling sunspot that's been responsible for those and the flare that occurred on the 9th. But that can change. So the wind speed is currently 374 kilometers per second at 4.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor for daytime and fair for nighttime conditions. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 39. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kaya Weidman of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is a red alert. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official broadcast.
In accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare an emergency to exist.
They are names, lifeless bodies left for strangers to see on, ground, bleeding out, are now names on a list growing longer with every tock of the clocks. We are seeing the future in 3D.
That was Ob Nox with Names, 2020 new music on the radio at WGXC from the album Templo del Sonido with Ob Nox or Lamont Bim Thomas on drums.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Today is a celebration of honor, duty, and patriotism. Our international cemetery is a solemn place, surrounded by over 400,000 soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, and Coast Guard men, and their families who have proudly served our nation.
Executive Director of Army National Military Cemeteries, Karen Durham Aguilera, spoke at Arlington National Cemetery on Veterans Day. To commemorate the memorial's 100th anniversary, members of the public were allowed to walk up to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier for the first time in 96 years. President Joe Biden also marked the first Veterans Day in 20 years that the U.S. has not been at war, paying tribute to the late Army General and former Secretary of State Colin Powell.
A man who was a friend, but who earned the universal respect of Americans and people for his leadership in uniform and out.
A federal appeals court Thursday intervened to temporarily block the National Archives from handing over Trump administration records to the House committee investigating the January 6th attack. A three-judge panel for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals issued a temporary injunction, giving the former president more time to argue against their release. Judge Bruce Schroeder, presiding over the Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Wisconsin, interrupted the lead prosecutor Thursday to prevent him from asking a far-right political commentator if the network he works for is biased.
This is not a political trial, and I don't know how you would isolate a person's particular politics and determine that that person is going to evaluate the evidence one way or another.
Rittenhouse is accused of killing two people and wounding a third during a protest over police brutality in Kenosha. Vice President Kamala Harris, French President Emmanuel Macron, and other leaders spoke at the Paris Peace Forum.
Most recently and throughout this pandemic, the gaps have undoubtedly become larger.
The U.S. and China have agreed to work together to combat climate change. Unveiling a joint declaration to cooperate on carbon emissions, scientists warn could raise temperatures beyond a 1.5 degrees Celsius margin of safety. The agreement calls for regulating decarbonization, reducing methane emissions, and fighting deforestation. In Michigan, a federal judge approved a $600 million settlement between the city of Flint and the state of Michigan for residents and others exposed to lead-contaminated drinking water. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
That was Charles Mingus with Hog Callin' Blues.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Ryan Thorensen Carson, who's the Environmental Campaign Coordinator for NYPIRG, or the New York Public Interest Research Group. And something I assume most of our listeners are very excited about, this is going to be the 40th anniversary of the passage of the bottle bill in New York State. And NYPIRG and other groups are trying to update the bottle bill to build on a success of the last 40 years. Ryan, what are some of NYPIRG's and other groups' ideas about how to modernize the bottle bill?
This campaign, we're really looking at, you know, the fact that this has been an incredibly successful law over its 40-year history. I mean, it's reduced roadside litter by 70% over that time. But, you know, it is getting to be a little bit outdated here. So one thing that we've really highlighted is that for the past couple of years, the actual return rate for redeemable bottles has kind of stagnated around 64%. So a couple of other states like Michigan and Oregon have actually looked at a similar problem, and their way of addressing it was increasing the bottle deposit from 5 cents to 10 cents. And they've actually seen that their redemption rate, their recycling rates, have gone right up pretty much immediately afterwards. So that is kind of piece one of what we're trying to do with the bottle bill. We think that we need to modernize the actual deposit behind it. But we're also looking to expand out what bottles are actually covered by the law. The last update of the law was back in 2009, where water bottles were added to the 5 cent redemption. But what we also want to see now is wine bottles, liquor bottles, and non-carbonated beverages, you know, your sports drinks and things like that, added to the list of things that are actually covered by the law.
Now, I remember a couple of years ago, there was an effort to expand the bottle bill, probably along these lines. I recollect that one of the opponents actually was some of the municipal recycling coordinators, because some of the things that would be taken out were the things within their own waste stream that they could get some money for recycling. Has that, you know, concern by some of the municipal recycling programs been addressed at all?
So there is still a concern from some of these municipal recycling programs. So one of the major reasons for that is that plastic is actually incredibly valuable right now, particularly PET plastics. And so they actually don't want to see that removed from their waste stream. But where we actually do see eye to eye right now is on glass. So right now, a lot of the municipal recycling programs around the state are particularly interested in getting more of the glass out of their waste stream. So in fact, I was actually speaking to some folks over at Okra in the Syracuse area the other day about this, and they really want to see more and more glass taken out of their municipal curbside recycling. So we are definitely in agreement there. It's really kind of the plastics issue that we're not exactly seeing eye to eye on right now. But one of the things that they're really dealing with in their municipal recycling programs is the fact that these bottles are oftentimes breaking, whether it's in the bin or in the bag, when it actually gets to their recycling plants. And it's really just kind of jamming up the works when they're attempting to recycle. So that's definitely where we do see eye to eye on, but it's really some of the plastics that we're not seeing it as eye to eye on at the moment.
Now, has the new governor, Governor Hochul, weighed in yet as to whether or not she supports an expansion and improvement of the bottle bill?
She has not yet. What we've been doing so far this month in November is that we've been calling on her to put this bill into her executive budget. Her predecessor, Governor Cuomo, actually supported an expansion of the bottle bill back in 2019, I believe. And so we're hoping that she'll be on the same track. She's, you know, just in her first couple of weeks, she's really gestured towards a real interest in serving environmental legislation here in New York State. So we're really hopeful. But our strategy so far is we've created a series of sign-on letters that we've been delivering to her regional offices, asking her to put this into her executive budget come January. And now we have over 100 groups that are signed on to that sign-on letter from across the state.
I recently was watching an old Seinfeld refund, and it was the one where Kramer and Newman were trying to become rich by taking the 5 cents deposit in New York, and I believe bring it to Michigan, which I think had 10 cents or something.
A classic.
How do we deal with that problem that, you know, are all the neighboring states going to have the same level of deposit on the bottle bill?
Well, so there's actually quite a variance across the country in terms of what the different bottle bills cover. But one of the stipulations, you know, in New York and in Michigan, for anybody who's trying to do a get rich quick scheme that's listening to this, unfortunately, those bottles are not necessarily, you know, interchangeable. You can't do a big road trip with your bottles and bring them to Michigan because there is, you know, A, just kind of a difference in the law, and B, you know, they're not as, you know, the law very clearly stipulates that you can only bring back your bottle to the state in which you purchased it. So unfortunately, if anybody's trying to, you know, make a quick buck by driving over to, you know, the Great Lakes region, they're going to be out of luck, unfortunately.
I understand you all have been, you know, doing some type of road tour with the bottle bill. I actually say one of my first jobs for Nightbird, 74, 75, was driving a school bus to upstate county fairs to explain the bottle bill. Spent the summer doing that. But what's your tour at this point?
Yeah, so we are on tour. We're in the midst of it right now. On the 5th, we had an event up in Buffalo where we were rallying with groups including Sierra Club, League of Women's Voters, Citizen Action Campaign. These types of campaigns have all been really bought into this. And what we've been doing is we've been bringing a tall, 20-foot tall inflatable bottle where we have been bringing it outside of different municipal buildings and calling on local legislatures and Governor Hochul to modernize the bill. So it's been really great. You know, it's been a really wonderful conversation starter. When we were in Buffalo, we set it up in Niagara Square, and a bunch of high school kids immediately came running over and they're like, "What's the deal with the bottle?" And we were telling them about the bottle deposit. And, you know, it was funny. You know, one of them immediately said to me, "Well, no, I'm not going to go out of my way to return a bottle if it's only a nickel." And then when I pointed out to him, "Well, what if there were 10 bottles and you got a dollar back?" You know, he started nodding his head and was like, "You know what? I probably would do that." So it's a really great conversation starter. We also, in just the past week, have gone to Syracuse and Binghamton. And in the weeks ahead, we'll be going to New Paltz, Long Island, and New York City. And we'll be releasing a report that's going to be looking at the different bottle redemption centers and their relationship to being in food deserts this coming week in Albany as well.
And I do remember when I lived in New York City, which has a much higher density of buildings than, say, in Albany. There, in fact, were a lot of people, some of them homeless, who were really out there, collecting those bottles. That was a lot of people were relying upon that. In the last 2 minutes left, 90 seconds, what is the political situation looking like? What's the opposition? Why wouldn't we want to modernize the bottle that's been a success story over the last 40 years?
Yeah, so there's this misconception right now that, this is going to be put on the backs of consumers, which I definitely want to stress is not the case. And that's a lot of the kind of scare tactics that's coming out of, your major corporations, places like, Coca-Cola and, some of these liquor companies that haven't been affected by the law, but now would be. But this would not be put onto the backs of consumers here. This is a refundable deposit. When the bottler passes it down to the consumer brings it back and recycles it. Right now, what we actually see is only 64% of redeemable bottles in New York actually are redeemed into reverse vending machines. And so that number has been stagnant for quite some time. In terms of the unclaimed bottle deposits, somebody might be wondering, well, if we're recycling 64% of them, what happens with the rest of them? Those other bottle deposits actually go into a portion of it goes into the state general fund, which then goes into the environmental protection fund. And so what we definitely want to see is with this increased deposit and that increased money that would go towards the state in the case that those bottles aren't redeemed. So we'd definitely like to see these this money being invested into underserved low-income communities to actually be able to expand their recycling programs and their programs to clean up litter.
Ryan Thornton Carson, Environmental Campaign Coordinator, NYPIRG, NYPIRG.org on the web. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
A new report shows rural New Yorkers face disparities in access to health care. And advocates for older residents say it underscores the need for action on a statewide level. AARP New York compiled data which show rural New Yorkers ages 50 and older are less healthy and are more likely to be living with a disability compared to residents of urban areas. AARP New York State Director Beth Finkel says access to doctors is a big problem.
If you're not regularly monitoring your health, if you're not seeing a physician on a regular basis, you're going to have a problem. No one's going to be there to be able to say to you, your cholesterol is too high.
The report notes there are half as many critical access hospitals for rural New Yorkers than for New York City residents. AARP is recommending tax credits and grants to link more rural homes to emergency medical services and increased funding for nutrition programs and transportation services. Rural New York generally has a larger share of older adults than urban areas, according to State Senator Rachel May of Central New York, who chairs both the Aging and Rural Resources Committees. She says working in rural health care must become more sustainable.
The number one reason is the same reason as in cities. We just don't have enough people going into health care, especially long-term care, to meet the need now, let alone the increased need in the future.
Senator May has sponsored a bill in the Health Committee that would increase minimum pay for home care aides and set minimum rates for providers' Medicaid reimbursement. The AARP report also reveals regional disparities in digital connectivity. In Albany, Erie, and Monroe counties, 99% of residents have access to high-speed internet. But in Yates County, it's 73% and only 24% in Hamilton County. Finkel says especially in the pandemic, reliable internet connections affect healthcare.
We're all going to need more internet services, broadband. We're going to make sure that we can get telehealth. And you can't get telehealth if you don't have the internet.
Finkel says AARP is also pushing for increased access to telehealth technology, equipment, and training, and subsidies for low-income older rural New Yorkers to help them afford devices. I'm Michaela Savitt for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
We'll be right back.